استمع إلى بودكاست رام قوتك من قلبك برعاية رام على تطبيق أبل بودكاست، سبوتيفاي أو أي منصة صوتية أخرى. في هذه الرحلة نكتشف مع بعض خلال شهر رمضان الكريم شلون نكون بقمة عطائنا المعنوي، الفكري والإنساني، ونستمد من هذا الشهر الكريم مصدر قوتنا الداخلية والخارجية.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Matchup. I'm Ben Ladner, joined by Seth Tau. Going to spend a little bit more time on Maryland and that game coming up on Friday night. We're recording this on a Wednesday evening. It's about 6:15. We started recording around 6 o'clock. The biggest thing I look at in this game is just the health of Deron Davis. I think that could be maybe the single biggest key. And the kind of the thing that I kept coming back to was we were talking to Johnny. When you talk about Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith and dealing with these guys inside for Maryland, they are big, they're strong, they're physical, and they look to score. That's really the focus of their offense, is going inside, scoring down low. And Juwan Morgan, he's capable as a defender there. He's guarded bigger guys at times this season. He's done well, if not great, but he's been fine at the very least. And I think he can handle that kind of matchup, but for an entire game, the 36, 37 minutes that he's likely going to be out on the floor, that could be a little bit of a challenge, not only because of the physical toll that it takes on you, but, Juwan Morgan struggled with foul trouble in big games this season. You look at Arkansas, you look at recently Michigan, and there have been others that I can't even think of off the top of my head. But
And there are times where the worry of getting into foul trouble has caused him to soften up a little bit defensively.
Exactly. So, that's something that I look at where I think you need to have that extra big body. And Deron Davis didn't play against Michigan. Justin Smith, maybe you play him at the five if Davis can't go, just get an athletic body in there and lean all the way in.
If Morgan's on the bench,
just try Justin at the five.
Yeah.
I don't know what direction they'll go if they don't have Deron Davis, because you just need kind of that size to match up with Maryland's size.
Yeah, Indiana did tweet out a picture today that showed Deron Davis practicing, so you take that for what it is. We'll find out more at the press conference, but Deron Davis is important to this game. Is like, because even if he plays, Juwan, just because of Maryland having two bigs, it's not just Bruno Fernando. Jalen Smith is good too. He's very good.
Oh yeah,
and they're both 6'10". We'll get into the matchups a little bit later, but there may be times where you're going to have two, like it's late in the game. There may be times where you have to have two bigs on the court.
Yeah, I think so, and that kind of dovetails with maybe strategically what I might expect from Indiana is just try to deny those guys their looks. Obviously that's the game plan against Maryland. It's a question of, does Indiana have the personnel to do that? Because I think if you can deny Fernando, deny Smith those looks inside, Maryland's not a great three-point shooting team. They're about 130-something, maybe 150th in the country, kind of in that bracket, around 35% from three. They've got two guys shooting above 40%. That's Wiggins and Ayala, both, 40 and 48% on a combined, eight attempts per game, roughly. And then you got Anthony Cowan taking six per game, shooting about 35%. And that's about it. No one else really poses that big of a threat from three. And having three guys who can knock down the shot is important. That's threatening. It's definitely dangerous for a defense. But it's not like they're just flanked with ridiculous shooters in the same way that a team like Michigan is, like Indiana just saw. So I think maybe that's something that Indiana can look to and say, look, we're going to I've been critical of Archie Miller's liberal doubling of the post in the past. I think Indiana last season tended to double when they didn't need to and just overdid it in that sense. But I do think this is a game where maybe you send that hard double right from Jump Street and just say, we're going to force the ball out of these guys' hands, make someone else beat us. And, you know, again, like most games, you'll probably see a couple of different looks. You'll see them try a few different things. But I think that's something that they'll maybe look to early in the game just to see, you know, is this going to be a viable strategy for the full 40 minutes?
Right, yeah. And the other thing to consider is that sort kind of like Michigan, Maryland doesn't play with that much depth.
Yeah.
So like those two guys that Johnny mentioned, Sorrell Smith and Ricky Lindo, they really were not playing much until the last few games. Turgeon's kind of upped their role a little bit in the last few games, which I think it has helped Eric Ayala a bit to kind of dial his role back some. But because they don't play with much depth, the role of those three-point shooters that you mentioned are going to be on the court a little bit more than, you know, a team that would have like a 7 or 8-man rotation, a little bit different than a team that's going to be playing an 8-man rotation. So the role of those three-point shooters could still loom large.
Yeah, and it also puts a lot on Anthony Cowan's shoulders, you know, like all season. That's kind of been the case the whole year, and even last season he was tasked with a lot of offensive kind of creative burden. That's going to continue. Obviously, Fernando is going to get his touches. Your point about Maryland's depth kind of is maybe a good touchstone into Indiana's depth, because
that's been a problem.
They haven't had much of it recently. It's been a really tough go, and you know, injuries have been obviously the main factor. And it's kind of funny listening to Archie Miller talk about that on the radio show two nights ago, where he was basically saying like, yeah, we've had this guy out, we've had this guy out, and you know, you'd like to put this guy in to help replace them, but he's been injured too. So it's really just kind of crazy. You go down the line, you have Zach McRoberts, Rob Finney, Devontae Green earlier in the year, Jerome Hunter, Race Thompson, everyone is just, yeah. You know, even, you know, Deron Davis now is missing time, or at least has missed time against Michigan. So it's tough sledding. It's been tough sledding for Indiana kind of all season long. And it's been the sort of injury plague that you don't really think about, because it's, you know, all the star players are still intact. You got your starting lineup kind of more or less the way you want it, with maybe the exception of McRoberts. But it's just kind of been these minor things that have been, you know, one after the other, but never like five guys all at one time, or, you know, your two best players all at one time, God forbid. So
it could be worse.
It could be worse, but it also is maybe worse than I've kind of pictured it in my mind. Because I've never, until like maybe a couple weeks ago, I never really had stepped back and considered how injured this team is. But it really is striking just how many guys have missed time and how few options they're down to. And that Michigan game was a great example of it.
Yeah, it's been like that all season, with just with guys not being able to practice. And Archie's talked about that throughout the season. Like in December, he would say, we've not been able to have a single practice with the full team yet, because every day it's somebody different that can't go. But yeah, even just the bench production that they've been getting from the guys that can go has just not been there, because they're just Davis and Finney are the two absences that have really hurt that in terms of bench depth, because if Finney starts, then Green would be coming off the bench, and you can rely on Green to score at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And Davis will provide some points off the bench. But without those two, against Michigan, the only guys they played off the bench played Clifton Moore for like 7 minutes or something like that. And what you can't reasonably expect that much from Clifton Moore.
Is just not good at this stage, which is not a slight at Clifton Moore. It's just that he doesn't play very much. He hasn't had the opportunity, and he just isn't good enough to play against Big Ten teams.
Right.
Yeah.
But they played him. Evan Fitzner played, his role has maybe decreased in every single passing game.
He's been maybe the most disappointing player on the team for me. All season. It hasn't been great.
What you pictured for him before the season and what he is now, it just kind of never really materialized. Yeah. It has not really materialized. And there's a lot of season left.
Right.
But it just has not really materialized. And it's at the point where it's a little more obvious that it's not just matchup based in these games where he's not playing as much.
Yeah. And to make a point on Fitzner, maybe this is the game where he kind of breaks out of it, because
he's capable.
Yeah, and I know I've said this before, but you know, you can really use him to try to pull those rim protectors away from the basket. If you put him in at the five in kind of these small, spacey lineups and put some shooting on the floor, if he actually does his job and stands behind the 3-point line, which I've criticized him for not doing before, if he does that, and he's guarding Bruno Fernando, now that's a different question on the defensive end. He probably gets eaten up trying to guard Fernando. But offensively, if you can drag a Jalen Smith or a Bruno Fernando away from the rim on defense, that opens up lanes for Romeo Langford, like we talked about with Johnny, getting to the basket. You know, he's not seeing as many bodies when he gets to the rim. Juwan Morgan doesn't have to face as many, or at least as strong, double teams when he tries to post up, because you've got kind of the shooting threat who's taking a big man away from the rim. That can be valuable. Even if he's not hitting shots at a super high rate or taking shots at a, you know, super high clip, he can still be valuable in that sense. And that's maybe been the reason that I've been disappointed in him more than anything, is just that it's just he hasn't really served the function that I think he could. You know, it's with a guy like Justin Smith, he's playing the role you expect him to. He just has struggled sometimes, and you right. understand that. But with Fitzner, it's just like you'd like to see him get used and like to see him assert himself in a different way. And he just hasn't really done that in the manner that I think I and maybe you and plenty of other people expected going into the year.
Yeah, definitely. But to round off my point about the bench production, it was more Fitzner and McRoberts, who has not scored since November. So he has not scored since the Duke game.
Wow. You know, there's a good argument to be made. I'd be sympathetic to an argument that says, look, it's not his job to score. He's a hustle guy. He plays defense, right. Get rebounds, you know, move the ball. That's all true. But you gotta pose a threat. You know, right. if you don't pose a threat to score the ball, teams just don't have to guard you.
Right.
Like, you gotta shoot the ball. You gotta knock down a shot, you know, at least every two games or something to make the defense respect you. Now, he's been banged up, he's missed games, so the 1 point since November is not, you know, it's not like he's played Romeo Langford's minutes and not scored, but still, you gotta be a little more productive than that just to kind of keep opponents honest.
Yeah, but so Indiana is, they're still in good shape, regardless of that. I think once Davis and Finney come back, I think their bench will start producing some again, because there'll be some more reliable scorers on the bench in those roles. But do you want to start looking at projected matchups for?
I think that's a good way to go.
So we still don't know what Finney's status is. So either way, you're looking at Devontae Green or Rob Finney is going to guard Anthony Cowan.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting matchup. I think last year, the matchup between Devontae Green and Anthony Cowan was one of the more entertaining individual matchups we had all season.
And Cowan had a good game.
Yeah. And so did Green. Yeah. Yeah. That was a really entertaining matchup. So you want Finney healthy, but like, it would still be an entertaining matchup if Green and Cowan were to go at it again.
Yeah.
And then you could mix and match a little bit, because with Eric Ayala and Daryl Morcell, both are 6'5", and Ayala is listed at 205, Morcell 200. So I think you could go either way between Durham and Romeo Langford there.
Yeah.
I put Durham on Ayala because I think he plays more like a guard.
Yep.
And I have Langford on Morcell and vice versa, which, as we mentioned with Johnny, that's an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's the lack of, if Finney doesn't play, well, first of all, I want to ask you, if you're Archie Miller and you have Rob Finney and Devontae Green both healthy, who would you rather have defending Anthony Cowan?
Defending? I mean, Finney's a kid. For all that we hype up, that for all the talk that Green gets for being a solid defender, Finney has been a deep, pretty good defender.
I agree with you, yeah.
And I don't think you really have a bad option there.
I agree. I think I would. My slight preference would be Green.
I might lean that way as well, but you would still start Rob Finney just for what he brings on the offensive end, and you're not it's not a huge step down, if there is a step down defensively, from Green to Finney.
Yeah, I think I agree. As far as the wing, you know, you probably put Romeo on whoever the least threatening wing player is there, just because, you know, or maybe you feel like you want to put some size on Daryl Morcell, for instance, and you want to take away his three-point looks and have someone who can close out and with a little bit more strength.
If you're closing out anybody's three-point looks, you're closing out Ayala.
Yeah. So maybe you want to do that, and you want to, you know, put some length on him, some size. I think you'd go either way. Obviously,
Romeo, you have options.
Yeah, obviously, Romeo Langford is much bigger than Al Durham.
Langford's listed 6'6", Al Durham at 6'4", and he has about 35 pounds.
35 pounds?
Romeo's listed at 215 and Al Durham listed at 181.
Jeez, I didn't realize Al was that skinny.
Yeah.
I thought he was like 190 something. Anyway, that's not important. Yeah, I don't have a strong take on those wing matchups. Again, what I'm interested in is the front court.
استمع إلى بودكاست رام قوتك من قلبك برعاية رام على تطبيق أبل بودكاست، سبوتيفاي أو أي منصة صوتية أخرى. في هذه الرحلة نكتشف مع بعض خلال شهر رمضان الكريم شلون نكون بقمة عطائنا المعنوي، الفكري والإنساني، ونستمد من هذا الشهر الكريم مصدر قوتنا الداخلية والخارجية.
You know, Juwan Morgan is going to get the start on Bruno Fernando, most likely.
Right. Juwan will guard Bruno Fernando, and Justin Smith on Jalen Smith. Yeah. That's some Smith on Smith
a
action.
A good foreshadowing to the much-anticipated Langford on Langford matchup.
Exactly, yeah. But that's a tough matchup for Justin Smith, and he's been good defensively.
He's been terrific defensively.
He was great on Sunday against Iggy Brazdeikis.
Great against Louisville, great against Penn State. Great. I mean, every big time, you know, wing forward type, except for maybe Zion Williamson, that Indiana's played this season, I think Smith has been fantastic.
Right. But the thing is with Smith, I don't think he's really had to guard a true big man yet. And that's pretty much what Jalen Smith is. Smith will play a little bit more from the outside just because Fernando is so controlling and dominant in the post that Smith will play a little bit more from the outside. He'll face up a little bit more instead of try to back you down. He'll go in and shoot some floaters in the paint, or just kind of drive straight to the hoop instead of trying to post you up. But which I think suits Justin Smith a little bit more than Juwan Morgan. But so he's seen players like that. Like that's the type of guy that Jordan Wara was a little bit with Louisville.
Yep.
Except he could also shoot.
and dribble. Right. He was really good.
But the tougher thing is that, I mean, Jalen Smith is 6'10", Justin Smith is 6'7". So, you know, you got to play physical when you're giving up 3 inches. Even Justin Smith has weight on him.
And I think that to your point about being physical, I think Justin's capable of that because, like you said, he's much bigger. He uses his chest really well on defense. You know, he's so good at getting in a stance and keeping his arms out and kind of taking the contact with his chest. And he's so big that he's able to do that without getting pushed backwards or, you know, bothered by that. So I think he's up to that challenge. And you'd rather have him sliding his feet on the perimeter than Juwan Morgan, even though Juwan can do that a little bit. And then, you know, the big thing to me, you know, you could configure those matchups kind of either way. The big thing to me is just you got to rebound. Because Maryland, obviously the size, we've talked about the disparity there. You got to box out. You got to send 4 or 5 guys to the boards on every single defensive possession. And it wouldn't surprise me if that kind of hinged on Romeo Langford. I think it's going to be really important for him to crash the boards because he's a good rebounding guard. He can really get in there, get up above the rim, and kind of snare loose rebounds. I think that's going to be a really key point for Indiana is ending defensive possessions, not giving up offensive rebounds, and giving Maryland second chances. And I think that starts with getting everyone to go to the boards. And Romeo Langford, it wouldn't surprise me if he had 8, 9, 10 rebounds in this one.
Yeah. And on the other end for Langford, I'm just not totally convinced that Maryland has... We'll see what happens. I'm just not totally convinced that Maryland has somebody that can stop Romeo Langford.
I'm not either.
As Johnny said, they have not really faced a player like Langford yet this season. You know, I'm looking back at how they played last night against Amir Coffey. Obviously, much different player, but just kind of looking just to get some sort of a baseline about how they do against pretty good guards. And I mean, Maryland played well last night, but Coffey still had a decent game. I mean, Coffey had 16 points and 5 assists. He's been playing well, but obviously Langford's a different challenge than Amir Coffey. But
and you look at that Illinois game. Illinois didn't have anyone that could stop Romeo, and he got 28 points.
Exactly.
So it could be one of those games where. That's kind of the great luxury of having a guy like Romeo Langford is he's one of those guys where if you don't have anyone that can really check him, he can do whatever he wants. And there are very few guys like that in the Big Ten. There are some who, you know, they'll have a big game, they can get rolling, they can get going. But just to be able to, you know, impose your will on every possession is a huge luxury that not many teams have. And so if you don't have anyone that can provide resistance to that, you're in for a long night.
Yeah, but your point that you made when Johnny was on about how Bruno Fernando being a good rim protector, that could actually be a factor against Romeo. It would not totally shock me to see, you know, Maryland switch to a zone in the second half against Minnesota last night. That might allow them to have Fernando closer to the rim when Romeo Langford drives in.
Yeah, and we saw John Teske be a little bit of a deterrent in that Michigan game, especially early. His size bothered not only Juwan Morgan, but Romeo Langford at times, just being big around the rim, sticking his arms up, kind of barricading that. Yeah, that could be relevant. I think maybe one way to pull Fernando away from the rim, if he's guarding Juwan Morgan, is that Romeo Langford, Juwan Morgan pick and pop that's become kind of more prevalent over the last few games. They did it a lot in the second half against Michigan. That was kind of just their bread and butter play that they kept going to down the stretch. That might be the best play in Indiana's playbook, is just putting Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan in a pick and roll. And if Juwan's jump shot is real, which it's kind of becoming more and more sustainable. Oh, yeah. He's been knocking down shots at a consistent rate all season long.
Kind of like how we said with Romeo Langford, like until you get it to like middle of January, yeah, and he's still not hitting that three, then that can be like a legitimate long-term concern. Yeah. We're starting to get to that point.
It's close, but
it's kind of the opposite with Juwan Morgan. For a while, we've been saying, let's see how it holds up into conference play. Like once we get to mid to late January, if he's still knocking shots down at that clip, then that's a serious threat going forward.
Yeah.
And we're starting to get to that point.
Yeah. And so if he's, you know, if he can knock down one, two, maybe even three threes, five, like he did against Butler, and he's been able to pull Fernando away from the basket, you put them in that pick and pop. And if Bruno Fernando isn't there to help on Romeo Langford, he's going all the way to the basket. And if he is, then he just dishes it to Juwan Morgan for a, you know, top of the key three. So right. That could be something, you know, I kind of want Indiana to go to that right off the bat. I know Archie likes to run through sets and kind of, you know, do what he wants to do before, yeah, and see if it works before going to just the two-man game. And I get why. I get that there are reasons for that. But I think part of the slow starts that Indiana's, you know, had trouble with is that they're just not doing what they're best at early enough in the game. And, you know, we saw a big shift in that in the Michigan game where it started out with Devontae Green taking a lot of shots. He was, you know, he was getting some shots up in that first half. You know, Al Durham was touching the ball quite a bit. And they're good players. They should touch the ball. You know, there's value in just guys feeling the ball and feeling like they're involved and part of things. But, you know, you reach a point where if you don't have the players that can really make good on those opportunities, and, you know, Green, Durham, those guys, they are sometimes, not so much in other times. If you don't have those players and they're not executing, you don't really get anywhere. Right. Even if you're running brilliant sequences, brilliant actions, you have to have the personnel. And Indiana's best personnel is Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan. And so sometimes it is as simple as just give those two guys the ball and see what happens.
Yeah, and the slow starts, that's something they're going to have to avoid again, because we saw what happens when you do it against a good team in a tough environment against Michigan. You're going to lose. And that's while Maryland is not at the quality of team that Michigan is, that's still going to be a tough environment. Xfinity Center is one of the bigger arenas in the Big Ten, and that place is going to be rocking. Even with the students on break, that place is going to be loud.
And Maryland's a good team. I mean, this is like Johnny said, maybe the most talented team they've had in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Another point I noticed when I was looking at Maryland, it for obvious reasons, Indiana's bigs can't afford to get into foul trouble in this matchup, whether or not Davis is healthy. They just can't afford to get into foul trouble. But on the other hand, sending Smith and Fernando to the foul line is not the worst strategy, because neither of them are great free throw shooters. Fernando shoots 72% at the line, and Smith shoots 64%.
Yeah, that could be one where if you get caught in a switch or something, or for whatever reason, the matchups get scrambled and you have one of those guys posting up Al Durham or Devontae Green, maybe even Romeo Langford, you just tell them like, hey, take the foul, put him at the line, you know? And normally I'm a proponent of just let them shoot from the post, because, you know, the value proposition of a forced post shot is fairly low compared to like an open three or a layup or, you know, most other shots that an offense might get. But those two guys are good enough in the post, and especially with a big size advantage.
Fernando.
Yeah, and with a big size advantage, they can really hurt you. So I think in that scenario, if you want to weigh points per possession, you probably are giving up fewer points if you put one of those two guys at the line for two shots than you are if you're giving them, you know, basically an unmolested post hook out of the, you know, from the right block or whatever.
Yeah. And actually really convenient matchup. I was in, when I was home in Maryland over break, I went to the Maryland versus Nebraska game. So I have seen both of these teams.
It's a brilliant segue to our next segment.
Well, I was going to make a point about Maryland. I was going to make a point about
Maryland.
Keep
in mind, we'll use it when we segue.
Yes. My biggest takeaway from that game, aside from James Palmer Jr., who we'll get to later, but my biggest takeaway from that game was just how relentless Bruno Fernando is. I mean, so many of his points were on like second or third chance opportunities where he defended in the post and misses, grabs his own rebound, puts it right back up, misses, gets fouled. Yeah. And it's just going to be a challenge, real defensive challenge for Juwan Morgan.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying about the rebound battle. You got to put a body on these guys as soon as the shot goes up because they're relentless. And if they're able to get to the glass for those, you know, quick one after the other, second, third, fourth shot opportunities, just, you know, the Moses Malone style, tipping it off the backboard to yourself until you are eventually able to score or get fouled. If they're able to do that on every possession, like you're either going to foul out or you're just going to give up easy layups.
Yeah. One last point to make about Maryland is that at times they can struggle to take care of the ball, kind of similar to IU. They have three of their key guys average more than two turnovers per game, Fernando being one of them. Yeah. He can really turn the ball over.
And for a big guy, too, is a lot.
Yeah. Just with the number of times he'll get the ball in the post and try to go up from the post. Sometimes he'll lose the handle or just, you know, get it stolen away from him when he's about to go up into the post. And Cowan averages almost three turnovers per game.
That's quite a few. And you know, that makes kind of doubling a more appealing proposition for Indiana, because if you feel like you can put an extra body and obscure his vision, you force him maybe into some more turnovers. Now you risk him finding cutters or finding shooters or whatever. But if you can kind of manage that and leave the right people open and stick to the people that you need to, maybe that's a good way to force turnovers for Indiana.
Just put pressure on him in the post.
Hey, Seth, did you go to any basketball games over the break?
I did. I went to a game at Xfinity Center, Maryland versus Nebraska.
How convenient, because Nebraska is the next team on Indiana's schedule after Maryland and the next team we're going to talk about here on the matchup.
How convenient, and definitely not already mentioned.
No, I was totally off the cuff.
Oh, yeah.
So you look at Nebraska, obviously pegged to be one of the kind of premier teams in the Big Ten. Before the year, they've been good this season, 11-4. But Nebraska, you know, it's, we're going to be saying this about almost every team we do one of these podcasts for. They're a good team. The Big Ten is full of these really good teams that anyone can beat anyone on a given night, except maybe Michigan. They seem pretty unbeatable at this point in the year, but who knows?
You can put Michigan State in that category.
But pretty much everyone else, you know, playing for that third place spot and down is just kind of, it's a bloodbath. It's just one team beating up on another. So,
استمع إلى بودكاست رام قوتك من قلبك برعاية رام على تطبيق أبل بودكاست، سبوتيفاي أو أي منصة صوتية أخرى. في هذه الرحلة نكتشف مع بعض خلال شهر رمضان الكريم شلون نكون بقمة عطائنا المعنوي، الفكري والإنساني، ونستمد من هذا الشهر الكريم مصدر قوتنا الداخلية والخارجية.
Nebraska poses a big challenge. Unlike Maryland, they actually have some capable three-point shooters across this roster. Oh, I apologize. They're actually lower in three-point percentage. No, they're not. They're higher. I was looking at the conference stats. They shoot about a percentage point higher than Maryland for overall from three. Yeah. And, you know, add that up over the course of a game, it can make a difference. The big thing that's different, though, is just how many three-point shooters they have. You know, you look at Isaac Copeland, Glenn Watson, Thomas Allen, Nana Kenton, if I pronounce that right. Isaiah Roby, you know, not shooting it great so far this season, but you figure that at some point he will. James Palmer, same kind of story, about 33% from him. So they've got guys who can shoot the ball and maybe guys who are, you know, even if the stats aren't quite as threatening, it's just sort of the reputation, guys you know you have to guard, almost like Romeo Langford. You know, teams aren't going to give Romeo Langford open threes, even if he's not shooting a great percentage.
Right.
I think James Palmer and Isaiah Roby are two of those sorts of guys, and then the rest of the role players can really shoot it.
Yeah, the thing that struck me when I was researching for this on Nebraska was their efficiency stats on both ends. They have one of the top, in terms of efficiency, they have one of the top offenses, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country. They score just shy of 80 points per game, but they're 10th in the country in the KenPom adjusted offensive efficiency at 1.1 1.6 points per possession.
Yeah.
And that's very, very good.
It's very good. Yeah, and they shoot, you know, 54.5% from two and 36.5% from three. I mean, those are fantastic.
They can really score, but on the other end, their defense can be a little suspect. At least when you look at their stats in Big Ten games, they're at 1.13 points per possession defensively, and that's not great when you're on defense. That's second to last in the conference, behind just ahead of Iowa, whose defense is really bad.
Yeah.
Could end up shaping up to be a little bit of a track meet, not necessarily in pace, but on the scoreboard, a bit of a track meet. Indiana's going to have to show up ready to score a lot.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to those slow starts that Archie Miller's kind of been bemoaning the last few media.
Not just Archie Miller.
Everyone, it's been a problem. And again, maybe the solution is just give the ball to your best players earlier in the game. I don't know. We'll see. They've got a couple games here to kind of figure it out.
But I think it will be important in this game, maybe more so than any other matchup than Indiana has played so far this season, for Indiana to dictate the pace from the opening tip. Maybe that has been part of the problem that has led to slow starts. But I think in this game, they cannot let Nebraska run them out of the gym. And in terms of pace, they can't get into a physical track meet with Nebraska. They need to be ready to score, but I think Indiana needs to dictate the pace of this game, because if they let Nebraska have a lot of quick possessions, I don't know that Indiana is going to be able to keep up, because they're just not that kind of team.
Right, and it can also, you know, because they're not that kind of team, if you get baited into playing that style, it's not just that you're letting the other team do what they want. Sometimes that can have an effect where you end up, you know, playing the same kind of way. You force quick shots. You know, you take shots that aren't there. You force things that you don't have. And so it can kind of have this mental effect as well, where you kind of take the bait and get kind of sped up yourself on offense, which we've seen Indiana do a couple times this season, I think. And fast teams, I've said this before, fast teams have been an issue. Arkansas, Duke, both teams that want to get up and down, play athletic styles, have posed problems for Indiana. And so, and even Michigan to some extent, even though they execute a little bit better in the half court. And, you know, Nebraska, if they're going to get up and down, if they're going to push the pace, that poses a distinct challenge for Indiana and something that is going to be important for them to figure out.
Yeah, in terms of Big Ten play, this is the fastest team Indiana's played so far in terms of tempo. Nebraska's fourth in the conference in KenPom tempo rating at 69. But something else I noticed about Nebraska, they've got to lead the country with the most juniors in their starting lineup. they've got three guys that are juniors.
Well, yeah, Glenn Watson.
Glenn Watson Jr., James Palmer Jr., Isaac Copeland Jr.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
junior, and junior.
That's like the time I think Baylor had three Quincy's on their team at one time. I mean, how crazy is that? Three Quincy's. How many Quincy's do you know?
None,
right. And they had three in the same team.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But when you start to look at projected matchups for this game, Green or Finney, again, still don't know.
I think Finney's probably back.
You would think, yeah. But you just never know. Yeah. So Green/Finney is going to get Glenn Watson, who's kind of a plucky guard. He can pick his spots, and I've got a larger point about him later. And then Thomas Allen starts at the two guard for them. Al Durham will get him. Al Durham's going to have some size on him. He's 3 inches taller than Thomas Allen.
Yeah.
Romeo Langford is probably going to end up with the James Palmer Jr. assignment.
Awesome matchup there.
That is going to be an insanely good matchup. Yeah. That I'm licking my chops at that one.
Yeah.
And then you'll have Justin Smith on Isaiah Roby, which underratedly could end up being a better matchup.
Another awesome matchup.
That's a great matchup.
I'll say this. I'm a sucker for Justin Smith against an elite forward. He's just so much fun to watch. So I'm all in on those sorts of matchups.
Yeah. And then Juwan Morgan on Isaac Copeland Jr.
That's going to be a fun game.
Yeah, that's going to be a really, really fun game. And James Palmer Jr. is going to be one of the better players Indiana sees this season. He's just electric. Like he averages over 20 points per game.
And he's big too. You know, he's listed 6'5", about 200, but you watch him up close, and you and I had the chance to do that at the Big Ten tournament last year. And that's the thing.
And when I was in Maryland.
Right. And the thing that really stuck out to me about just Nebraska as a team is how big they are. Isaiah Roby is big. He's a little skinny, but he's big, he's athletic, he's tall, he's long.
He's got a long wingspan.
Yeah. James Palmer is put together. He's a big guy. Copeland is giant in the middle. So they've got some size, even if you don't necessarily see it like on the roster sheet. You get it up close, and Romeo Langford's the same way. These are big guys, and it's going to be a challenge for Indiana to deal with, just the strength and the physicality in addition to the speed that we talked about.
Yeah, so here's a James Palmer Jr. stat that I found it a little hard to believe. There's only been one game this year where he has not scored in double figures.
That's impressive.
One game all year
where he wasn't in double. 15?
Yeah, something like that. Crazy. He's just got so many different ways he can beat you, because you mentioned he's shooting like 33% from three. That's not bad enough to where you can just leave him open. And there was a game earlier this season where he went 6-for-7 on threes against Creighton, and you know that letting somebody shoot like that will kill you in a game. He can take most players in the conference off the dribble. He's a very good driver, and he can get to the free throw line pretty often. He averages 8 free throws attempted per game, and he's an 81% free throw shooter. And the other I mentioned how the one takeaway I had from the Maryland-Nebraska game. The other is just how much defensive attention you have to pay James Palmer Jr. if you even want to slow him down, let alone stop him. I mean, and just the amount of attention you have to give to him can create not defensive lapses, because you're intentionally giving more attention to James Palmer Jr., but that can kind of create some holes where guys like Glenn Watson and Thomas Allen are able to pick their spots and score a little bit.
Yeah, and there aren't that many hiding spots on this team. You know, there are only so many people that you can credibly leave open who you feel comfortable doing so with. You know, if you leave Isaiah Roby, he's going to hurt you. You know, if you leave Glenn Watson, like, he can hurt you. These guys are capable scorers. So if you do send an extra man, if it's an outright double against James Palmer, if you shade his direction, or if you know, let's say Romeo Langford gets beat off the dribble on a drive and you need to help, Nebraska has people who can beat you off of those kind of kick out passes and those ball rotations. So it poses a challenge, just kind of the gravity and the pull that he has on an entire defense.
Yeah. He's an all conference player at this point. I mean, he's having an outstanding season.
Before we go, what are you up to recently? Anything you want to plug before we get out of here? You'll obviously be at the Maryland game, which will be exciting.
I will be at the Maryland game, so look out for that coverage. I've got some things I'm working on.
A tease. We've got a tease.
I'll leave it at that. I've got some things I'm working on.
All right. I wish I could say I have some things I'm working on, but
right after break.
Yeah, right after the break. You know, the slate is clear. But I was on Banner Monday yesterday. We did Basketball 201. That was fun. Our longest episode of that ever, about 45 minutes on the Michigan game. I will actually be broadcasting the Nebraska game on WIUX 99.1 if you're in Bloomington, WIUX.org/stream if you are not in Bloomington. And then just follow me on Twitter at @BLadner_. That's kind of where you can keep up with everything. Follow you at Seth Tau.
Yeah, and I guess you will all hear from us again next week. We'll get back in here and talk about Indiana Purdue.
Yep, obviously keep up with the Assembly Call, Inside the Hall, all of their coverage. You know, we're biased, but I think they do a great job. until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU Hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.